we don't want that flag, we don't want the anthem, we don't want this political class, we want the whole thing consigned to the dustbin of history.
I'm joined here in Winchester Cathedral by the Work and Pensions Secretary, Ian Duncan Smith, the Shadow Home Office Minister, Gloria De Piero, the leader of the UK Independence Party, Nigel Farage, the Liberal Democrat MP, Joe Swinson, and the Oscar-winning Julian Fellowes, who created the TV series Downton Abbey and is a recently appointed Conservative peer. And our first question comes from Nigel Dallard, please. Nigel Dallard.
In the vote on the EU referendum, why weren't MPs given the freedom to represent the views of the public in their constituencies?
Why weren't they? The woman in the third row there. Yes.
Well, arguably a lot of the policies that come to Parliament are made up by Parliament and by government itself. As far as I'm aware, this came from a poll that was suggested by the Prime Minister himself.
By the public vote.
By the public.
Yes. Yeah.
And so does that not prove that there was some want from the public to have this referendum?
Nigel Farage, what did you make of the government's attitude to this?
I agree with that. I mean, the idea that e-petitions could spark debates in Westminster was a fantastic idea that young people particularly thought, this is great, we can engage with the process. And at the first time that it succeeds, and we get a debate on the floor of the House of Commons, very cynically, the three-party leaders close down free speech, free voting on this issue, and people will ask themselves, is there any point in future in bothering to get signatures on these e-petitions? And that, I think, is really rather sad. But the answer to the question is very simple. Why no freedom of vote? Very easily, the political class in this country, all three political parties who are represented here on this platform, have made their minds up. They've made their minds up that we must be part of this new European state. And the one thing they will absolutely make sure we can never, ever do is express our opinion on it. David Cameron himself, the man who, of course, gave a cast-iron guarantee that he'd give us a referendum.
That is rubbish.
Well, that's what he wrote Sun newspaper.
Nigel wrote it about the constitutional treaty. The government has given the public a referendum on any future treaty. I voted for that at Maastricht, have a referendum.
Please, don't say they will never have a vote on anything in Europe.
This is the game you play, which you try and cast everybody as an extremist.
Your leader wrote in the Sun newspaper, I give you this cast-iron guarantee that if I'm the Prime Minister, the British will have their say on the constitutional treaty. He has broken his promise. And I must say, I think Cameron, Clegg and Miliband are wrong. The last time we discussed the most important constitutional question of our generation was back in 1975. It's a long time ago. You have to be over 54. And my parents voted yes. They voted for a common market, not for political union. And there are 30 million of us under the age of 54 who've never been asked. And I thought what happened in the Commons on Monday was a disgrace.
Well, I'll move on to a question from Simon Davis, please.
Does the Eurozone debt agreement mean that the UK is now a second-class citizen?
Let me just repeat this, because it's rather echoey here in the cathedral. Simon Davis asks, does the Eurozone debt agreement mean the UK is now a second-class country? Nigel Farage.
Well, David, you said that my views would provoke the panel. Well, I hope they do, because I think the political class in this and every other country in Europe has got this whole Eurozone debt crisis completely and utterly wrong. And increasingly, the peoples of Europe are waking up to one simple fact, that what we're doing in the name of saving the Eurozone is making things far, far worse. We are imprisoning countries in the south of Europe inside something they should never have joined. It is leading to violence and disorder on the streets as their democracy has been taken from them. And in Northern Europe, we're actually seeing the credit ratings of Northern European countries being damaged by the deal too. And a democratic revolution sweeping countries like Finland and the Netherlands. So would we be relegated to a second-class citizen if they push on? I can't believe that David Cameron is the most enthusiastic supporter of those countries pushing on to a full federal union. I think he's got it completely and utterly wrong. Giscard d'Estaing, a previous French president, once said that if the British can't accept the direction Europe is going in, they will have to be relegated to the status of a country like Switzerland. I thought, well, I don't know. It doesn't sound too bad to me. If it means we have exactly the same terms of trade with Europe, yep, that's good by me. If it means that we're one of the richest countries in Europe per capita, that's good by me. If it means we can have referendums that are meaningful, that's good by me. I would argue what we want to do is have a free trade deal with Europe, be friendly, be good neighbours, but let's become not a second-class citizen in the European Union, let's become a first-class country in the world. That is the future for this country that I want to see.
Ian Douglas, James Kirkwood's got our next question, please. James Kirkwood.
Would Jesus have cleared the temple of demonstrators?
St Paul's, of course. Would Jesus have cleared the temple of demonstrators, as apparently St Paul's is determined to do? Julian, Nigel Farage.
Well, here we are in Winchester Cathedral, and how would you feel, as residents of Winchester, if sort of the new Dale Farm was set up outside the gates here and you couldn't have come to this show this evening or couldn't come to worship on a Sunday? I think you'd be pretty angry about it. So I think the answer to the question is that Jesus would have cleared them away on the basis that they were stopping religious services from continuing, and because I feel that so many of the people that are there, getting back to Ian's point, actually are the sons and daughters of Daddy, who's a successful banker in the city, and they go home to Hampstead of an evening and they come back with a packed lunch Mummy's made them the next morning. So I think elements of this really aren't genuine. I just hope that they are removed, and I think the absolute deadline before we get tough ought to be Remembrance Sunday, because if they were still there and if there was a problem with Remembrance Sunday services going ahead, then that really would be wrong.
Woman up there. Yes.
Nigel Farage criticises his perceived lack of democracy in Europe, yet when there is true democracy on the streets, you want it got rid of.
No, I'm happy with protest. Absolutely happy with protest. I mean, surely we want protest, but do we want religious services in one of the most important churches in this country stopped? I don't think we do, and that is not reasonable protest.
Gloria, please.
Can the prison system cope with an increase in mandatory and life sentences?
The third row from the back.
As a victim of crime, I actually believe that the criminals should actually get the sentences that are handed out to them, and actually we should be stronger on that. If we build more prisons, we will actually create some employment opportunities and actually keep crime off the street.
So when you hear the words mandatory sentence, which is used by Ken Clark on the one hand, and then Joe saying that the judges will have the freedom to decide whether or not to impose, are you happy with that, or would you rather you're not?
I think our sentences are far too light, actually, and I think that the criminals actually go into they actually get off way too lightly, and actually we should be harder in our society.
Nigel Farage.
I think I agree with that. I must say, having studied this government on crime and punishment, Ken Clark's position is bizarre, isn't it? I mean, on the one hand, he seems to be arguing that virtually nobody should ever go to prison, and now he's talking about mandatory sentences. I think this is because of the pressure that Theresa May has put on him. Theresa May does say some quite sensible things from time to time. Can't think where she gets her lines from. The question, can the prison system cope with this new mandatory sentencing, if indeed it's to happen at all? The answer is no. And one thing that we just have not done is we haven't recognised that the criminal base in this country has increased massively over the last few years. There are lots of reasons for it, and it's very regrettable. But I think the British public are pretty sick to the back teeth of every single week reading about people who've been given lengthy sentences, as the lady just said, have not served those sentences, and have then gone on to reoffend. And these are some of the worst crimes that we can possibly talk about. We have to recognise that that base is much bigger than it used to be, and we need to embark upon a fairly substantial prison building programme, and we need to give people tough sentences and make sure they serve them, and let's have some deterrence in the criminal justice system.
All right. I'm
not entirely sure why this has been come up recently. I mean, obviously, I don't think the prisons could actually accommodate more life sentences, so the next thing that it's going to be is a deterrent. But if you look at America, they have the death penalty, and their crime rate is much higher than ours. So I can see no other way of that working. But what we really should be looking at is rehabilitation, and also looking into...
Actually, some states in America have the death penalty and some don't, and I would agree with you, there is no evidence that the death penalty is much of a deterrent. But what the Americans have done is to recognise that whilst rehabilitation, particularly for first-time offenders, is vital, there is a certain small percentage of society who just are recidivist, who just cannot be cured, and what they've done is to embark 25 years ago on an extensive prison-building programme, and violent crime in America has halved over the last quarter of a century.
But, Nigel, to say the criminal base, first of all, you're contradicting yourself because you're saying the criminal base has expanded hugely, and then you're saying there's a tiny proportion who you can't actually reach out to. To say that the solution to that problem, if you're taking the view that the criminal base has increased hugely, is to just build more prisons and lock more people up, and that is actually also an incredibly costly way of dealing with that. Doesn't help society, doesn't actually deal with the problem. No, it doesn't, because ultimately, unless you're going to lock them up forever, then it doesn't help society. What we need to do is get these people rehabilitated, as the lady says.
You cannot rehabilitate all of the criminal classes. It can't be done in many cases.
I want to go to the man at the very back there, please. We'll go on. We have 5 minutes or so left. I'd like just to take one more question. This is from Sam Fox, who's a sixth form student, I think.
Now that university applications have fallen significantly this year, is it still correct to have raised student tuition fees?
Yeah, these interesting figures that show that university applications have dropped by 9%, and the assumption being it may be because of the fees.
Look, it's no surprise at all, is it, for goodness sake? We have got a situation now where through the 7% that go to the private and public schools are now dominating public life in a way they haven't done for over 50 years. And my worry about this drop in university applications is in many cases it'll be the very bright people from poor families who think we cannot take on this risk. And as a result of our education policies, in many, many cases, bright children from the poorest backgrounds will not achieve their very best, and that's a big, big mistake.
We're wasting the brains of two-thirds of the population with this stuff. We can't afford to waste these brains.
A quick couple of points from you, sir, up there.
We don't want that flag. We don't want the anthem. We don't want this political class. We want the whole thing consigned to the dustbin of history.